Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Welcome, everyone. It's Belinda Ellsworth with Work From Your Happy Place, and we have a great show in store for you today. I am so excited to have Three Men and a Tenor with us. Formed in 1992 at Michigan State University, Three Men and a Tenor bring great pop vocal music, quick-witted humor, and a unique style of engaging performance that cannot be matched. The group has performed on stages with Jay Leno, The Beach Boys, Lee Greenwood, Chuck Berry, and Dionne Warwick, and was featured in a national PBS TV special, Three Men and a Tenor in Concert, broadcast in Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Boston, Miami, Las Vegas, and Nashville. The group was honored as Michigan's Best Entertainment twice and have headlined national stages, festivals, and fairs for over 24 years with a powerful blend of vocal harmonies and feel-good music for all ages. It is my great pleasure today to welcome Chuck Colby, Glenn Williams, Mark Stiles, and Paul Felch. Welcome, guys!
We love those guys. Huge. They're huge.
That was huge. Amazing.
Who are they?
Filled with energy. I love it.
Good
intro.
Never
heard of them. Awesome.
Good
job.
Awesome. Well, awesome. I'm so excited to have you guys here today.
Thanks.
You know, you're the epitome of what it is to work from your happy place. So why don't you just take us through a little bit of journey and fill us a little bit in on that 24 years. Give us a little bit more of that background of that bio.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So we got started as students at Michigan State University. We were part of the Men's Glee Club. And we were not a thing yet. And one day, the Glee Club director walked in front of the Glee Club and he said, "Gentlemen, we have a problem. In 2 weeks, we're going to do a concert with a jazz band, and it's sold out, and the jazz band is not going to be there.
Boo.
And so we need to fill up some time in that concert. So if you can do a solo or a duet or juggle, if you're not terrible, you're in. Come audition for me next week." And the four of us, you know, had this idea. A couple of the guys had talked about it. And we got together really quick and said, "Hey, we could be not awful.
Yeah, we're not terrible."
We learned a song, we auditioned, and the director's like, "Okay, you guys are in." And so we did that show, and immediately after the concert, other guys in the Glee Club said, "Oh my gosh, are you guys singing in the spring concert?" And we said, Well, I don't know, Dr. Johnson, are we singing in the spring concert?
Okay,
we said,
yeah,
"Well,
we know three songs.
Learn two more songs, and yeah, we'll put you in the spring concert." And we learned 10. And then
we're quick.
We started doing sorority parties and ice cream socials and art fairs, and then all of a sudden we were kind of a thing. Then a couple of us graduated, left school, and we stayed together because we were having a great time, and we figured out a way to do it that didn't cost anybody anything. We said, "Okay, we'll pay for your gas, we'll pay for your phone. And everybody keep doing this. Is that cool?" And we'll keep on reinvesting. We'll buy some sound equipment. And about a year and a half into it, we decided, you know what? We could almost make a living doing this.
Almost.
So for the next year or so, we almost made a living doing this. And then things got pretty good. We were doing a ton of school assemblies. We were, you know, I had been in a job where I was in schools all the time. And I thought, geez, you know, it would be a shame if we had to do all of our shows on Friday and Saturday nights. Mm. You know, that's kind of crazy. So we started doing school assemblies because we could work on a Tuesday morning or a Wednesday afternoon. And we started doing school performances. And the kids loved the show, and they would tell their parents about us. And then we parlayed that into a public performance filled with families. And it just became a really good way for us to build. And then we started filling auditoriums all over Michigan and the Midwest. And that's kind of our road to success right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
So give me a little bit of background then. That's a long way from playing in local schools in Michigan to playing for Jay Leno. So give me a little bit about, you know, about that road to that. Because that's awesome. That's an incredible success story. Yeah. So yeah. How did some of that come about?
Well, I've always said to people when I'm watching music shows on TV that really the only variable is the production level. I mean, if you take any of those artists off the stage at the Country Music Awards mm-hmm. and you put them in your living room and you give them a guitar, they're no more a performer than they are when they're on that stage. It's just the level to which it's produced. And so my point in that is that for our shows, there was such a variable in the shows we were doing that what we were doing in front of kids in school assemblies was working on a larger scale in front of corporate audiences. And it was also working on a larger scale in front of large festival audiences. And then out and out and out and out, and it kept kind of expanding. So it was kind of a natural metamorphosis of being a group that knew songs, that was standing shoulder to shoulder and performing, and becoming this thing that was actually starting to work on larger scale stages in front of larger audiences, and then all the way to national public television. So really for us, it was kind of like being aware of what we were building, where it worked, and then getting it in front of the right kinds of audiences.
Well, and then Mark's work as our marketing specialist, he was able to parlay those first school assemblies, sold out shows at these places, into, okay, these corporate events on the resume, and then, oh, you want to open up for the Beach Boys? Oh, I see you've done these things. Oh, yeah, you've got a track record. And then once mm-hmm. you have a couple of those opening acts, you get more opening acts.
Right.
And so those using that marketing tools to build that resume with early videos and paperwork, that really, we had a track record. And, we had a proven paper track record.
And I would say as a tip in terms of your listeners, as a very genuine thing that I figured out was that it needed to be genuine, but because we were doing so much with nonprofits, with schools and with like these big charitable events where we were the main entertainment for their big event to raise money. Well, for the media, that was a media gift because they were always looking to help support those nonprofit activities or those big festivals or those big fundraisers. And we were part of it. So I was calling the media saying, hey, I'm Mark Stiles. I'm a member of Three Men and a Tenor. We're a vocal group, and we are the headlining act at Pilsner Middle School coming up, and we're doing a big fundraiser for the schools. Mm-hmm. And so in each case, as we were building it out, we were always trying to find that connector, not necessarily to disingenuously take media time or to get on the air free or any free advertising, which is always great. Don't get me wrong.
Fair.
We understood the value of it. But we had to have the connector.
It wasn't an intentional use as a tool.
Right,
to get us.
Right. It was not. It was not intended to betray the media's trust or anything like that.
Sincerity is number one thing with us.
Exactly. It was a nice platform for us to say we're a singing group. You are a radio show that needs entertainment. How would you love it if we came in on your morning show where you're looking for some lively, punch, energy, that kind of thing? We were perfect for those kind of morning show entertainment shows. And it also helped promote, we're going to be in town tonight at 8 or tomorrow night at 8 or in 2 weeks or whatever that was. And so I would say we had the distinct advantage of being an entertainment act, growing our business through the media by doing the shows, the types of shows that Chuck was booking, which was, very much in line with, the nonprofits, the community-based, mm-hmm. The real big, those types of shows, those big fundraisers that everybody has and all kinds of different awareness programs and things. We were the perfect act for that kind of thing, and that really helped launch, quite a bit of opportunities for us.
That's great. I think there's a couple of really good learning points here if people didn't catch on to that or didn't really hear it clearly. And that is one, you need to learn to be an expert at something. So there was a lot of practice in that, and you started a lot of smaller venues, and the mm-hmm. better that you got, the larger venues that you were able to get.
A lot of trial and error, yeah.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of young entrepreneurs today with this sort of instant gratification society, they always say to me, I want to be a consultant. I'm like, well, what are you an expert at? Nothing. You can't really go be a consultant if you've done absolutely nothing. You need to go be an expert in something. Go find your craft.
In fact, we learned something that we weren't an expert in. We tried a theme show. Mm-hmm. Mark had this great idea of a show where we're going to do kind of this men's historical music. We're going to start with Gregorian chant. We're going to move into 15th century stuff. And then we're going to do some Civil War tunes. We had 7 costume changes in the first half.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then the second half of the show was kind of 1970s and us having fun. The show didn't work. So what they wanted was
if anybody wants to buy that concept, it's for sale.
Exactly.
But so free.
Okay, well, what it did is we tried to expand the product base. And we said, oh, no, you know what? That's not working. focus on this part of the product
right.
that really works.
Yeah. And your successes and run with them.
And Paul had always kind of kept planting the seed with us that, you know, when we're on stage, it's about the audience. It's not about contests. It's not about being who you're not. Be genuine, you know, be the group we are. Do the things we're good at. Do the things that make the audience respond. And it was never about contests or competitions. And people heard our name and they thought we were a barbershop act, which we're not. In fact, maybe one song a show is a barbershop number. Maybe. Sometimes there aren't any. But so people would come to the show expecting a certain thing. So give it to them what they're wanting.
I think the thing that really helped us grow early on in the early days was after every show, we're getting undressed, pre-packing up and leaving the show. We unloaded our own equipment back then. We would always talk about what went good and what went bad after every show. We analyzed every show, and we said, this worked, this didn't. Okay, we did an Eagles song that went on for 4 minutes and didn't really go anywhere. Let's never do that song again, and we never have. But the audience didn't respond the way we were hoping they would.
Yeah.
So we analyzed ourselves.
Live test marketing of the product. It was great.
And I think what's interesting about that is that, you know, a lot of groups today or you know, even shows would have a director that would take notes and give the notes. And we were basically giving our own notes to each other and saying, you know what, we're self-monitoring here, which I think is a great thing
for
any entrepreneur to do, you know, to say, hey, what worked for me today and what didn't work for me today? And what can I do better tomorrow?
And then you try the same thing over and over and over, and then you find over time, okay, this one works better than that one, even though they both work good, you narrow it down to your home run hitters.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important. And I think I wanted to make sure I got the other learning point out there is you've got to be willing to give. And a lot of people don't understand that there is a giving element to anybody that's getting started in business and doing all that community work and that, those nonprofit organizations that really helped move your career forward. And like you said, got you that media time.
And continues to, I mean, honestly, you know, we have made concessions for schools, for, Habitat for Humanity. One of our biggest, you know, moments of growth for our group was doing a major performance for Habitat for Humanity. And it was a benefit for them, but boy, did we ever benefit, because we got the audience, and that audience stayed with us for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's definitely a lot of truth to that.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So you guys are an a cappella group,
yes,
right? That hasn't been established so far, so I think that's awesome. And I think right now, you know what would be awesome is for you guys to sing a song for us.
Well, I don't need a whole lot of money. I don't need a big fine car. I got everything that a man could want. I got more than I could ask for. I don't have to run around. I don't have to stay out all night. 'Cause I got me a sweet, sweet loving woman, and she knows just how to treat me right. 'Cause my baby, she's alright. Oh, my baby, clean out of sight. Don't you know that she is? She's some kind of wonderful, yeah. She's some kind of wonderful, yes she is. She's some kind of wonderful, yeah, 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 yeah. And when she wraps her loving arms around me, it just drives me out of my mind. Yeah, ooh, when my baby kisses me, yeah, chills run up and down my spine. 'Cause my baby, she's alright. Oh, my baby, she's clean out of sight. Don't you know that she is? She's some kind of wonderful, yeah. She's some kind of wonderful, yes she is. She's some kind of wonderful, yeah, 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 yeah.
Is there anybody got a sweet little woman like mine?
You gotta testify now.
There's got to be somebody. Yeah, got a sweet
sweet little woman like mine. Whoa, can I get a witness? Can I get a witness? Can I get a witness?
That was absolutely, that was amazing, guys.
We
awesome.
Knocked that one out of the park.
That was always
man,
fun.
That was awesome.
Well, I think that's what's so great about your music is it's fun. It makes you feel good. And that's what really this whole show is all about is being able to work, make people happy, and enjoy your lifestyle as you're doing it.
Glenn was a little sharp, but we'll talk to him about it after.
Right. Glenn's just plain little.
So let's talk a little bit about how the business has shaped your lifestyles. So who'd like to take that lead?
Oh, man. Personally, it has completely shaped my lifestyle. I met my wife at one of our shows. So without this business, I wouldn't have my wife. I wouldn't have my son. I would not have learned through our own business practices all the things that have helped me establish a separate business. I've learned customer service. I've learned marketing. I've learned the simple things of having a business plan. All that came out of my experiences in this business.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. Anybody else?
We said early on that what we hoped for out of the group was that we could see the world and have someone else pay for it. And we half jokingly just meant that give the people something, the product that they wanted so that we could travel. And that would mean that we would get to see places and things that, that none of the four of us could have ever seen without it.
That's our happy place, by the way. We get to travel and see places.
Yeah, for sure.
Incredible.
For sure. I mean, I felt like I saw places that I could then bring back home and say to my wife, I've been here. It's great. We should take our kids there kind of thing. And we've been in front of audiences of people where we've met people that have enriched our lives and offered us things and visits and come do this with us and do that outside of our group, just on a social level. And we've had such loyal fans and so many and fans. We call them fans only because they're family, really, more than fans to us. But we've had some really close to us that have kind of become, you know, beyond the four of us, have become family members. And so, again, what an enriching way to live when it's your business and yet you're like making new business friends as family members and you're seeing places and it's offering you all of those things too.
Totally get that. Yeah. You know, I travel and then I get to take the family on the places that are really cool. Like,
oh, yeah,
we need
great,
to go back here.
Right.
But I love it because on any given place, I can call somebody now after doing this for almost 30 years and say, hey, I'm going to be in town. And they're like, don't stay in a hotel. Stay
right,
with
right,
me.
Right,
and
right.
Boy, it's so much more fun.
Yeah. Dinner's at four. Isn't that great? Barbecue's on. Be
I
there.
I know. It just
and with us, they're saying, come on over because we're going to sing a few songs for us. We know that.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
It's interesting. I think a career can sometimes become someone's identity. I don't think it is any of our identities, but I think it is. It's a major part of who we are.
Yeah.
And I know that when we take a couple of weeks off, when we don't have shows in that time, I start to feel a real void. Mm-hmm. And it's because of what we do together and what we do together as a group for people. You know, it's allowed us as a group to change people's lives. I know that sounds really corny and silly, but when we do our show and we lift people up and they leave smiling and laughing and having had a great time for a couple of hours, we have done something to contribute it positively for the, you know, positively in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most vital thing we do.
I totally get it. You know, I speak about every weekend, and I've had about a month off. I've got a gig this weekend. But I said to Chris about a week ago, I said, what's going on with us? We're just sort of at odds with each other. And he looked at me and he said, because you haven't worked. You haven't been out of the house.
Yeah, that's right.
And he goes, I don't mean that mean, but you're in your element when you're doing what you do.
Exactly.
And I thought about it. You know what? And of course, I'm home. And so he's used to getting to do whatever he wants to do on Saturdays with Olivia or go do some science project. Instead, I'm going, okay, I've got a list. Okay, let's go.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah,
he's like, okay, you cannot get on back to work. So, and that's where I'm shining too. So it's really funny.
It's funny because Chuck says, if we haven't done some shows in a while, he feels like he's missing something. But because I run a secondary business, it's still me. It is still part of that. The energy of my persona on stage carries into my business because your presentation is everything. So I carry an energetic, upbeat characterization, you know, or personality into my business. And so as soon as the phone rings, hey, this is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I'm on.
Right.
Just as going on stage. I meet with somebody, I'm on. So it's funny because I live the character, the tenor, almost all the time until the phone stops ringing. And okay, now it's just me, but...
And for me, it was a slow progression. I started off in blue collar, and you're not outgoing. You don't have to go and meet people to network. You don't have to hand out your business cards and meet and greet people like we do after our shows. The meeting greets after our show, we love to talk with people. I've met literally hundreds of thousands of people in the last 25 years with these guys. And I would have never thought that I could meet that many people and greet them, you know, with such an ease, because most people are, I mean, think of yourself back in high school and you had to get up and give a report. You're standing up there by yourself and you're shaking and you're reading from a piece of paper. Now put that piece of paper down and now talk to the people. Now add the element of singing. Sing your report. Now while you're singing your report, now dance around and tell a few jokes in between. This is what we had to progress to become entertainers. And I walk out in front of 72,000 people at Michigan State University's halftime show against Ohio State, one of the biggest games of the year. This is like 20 years ago. We're standing in the middle of the field, and I'm looking at 72,000 people singing with a 300-plus piece band as our backup band. And I'm thinking, this is not real. But it's just an amazing evolution, and for me, it just allows me to have a confidence now to go talk to people, whereas I was a blue-collar worker in my own little cubicle or my own little work area. I'm meeting a lot of people, and I'm much more of a wide-open person because of this.
Oh, that really is nice. So let's talk about what one or two of your greatest skill sets are that you think have really contributed to your overall success.
Well, I would say one of them is that we all recognize how important it is to be on when we're in front of the right people. I think that that's a gift that we've had, the sense of timing that we have with each other, the sense of awareness of who's speaking and who's got an idea or who's going to say something always tends to come in at the right time. But, you know, say we're at an airport and someone, you know, just seems to kind of hit the right nerve and we kind of look at each other and say, we should sing to this person. And we do. Mm-hmm. And it ends up being the right person who upgraded our seats or, you know, that's one small example, but you know what I mean? Like we recognize as a group how important it is to our business success moving forward that right now we need to deliver. We need to be on. We have 15 minutes. We got to do 3 songs and we got to be off the stage and we tear that up. And I think that's one major important skill that we've learned each other's, like a basketball team, when you throw the pass and you don't even know the guy's there yet, he catches it and hits the 3-pointer. Sure. For us, it's like he's going to step forward. Chuck's going to say the next thing. We're not going to step on each other. And you know what, guys, we look at each other and we recognize this is a big hitter. This person standing in front of us has a huge impact on our future. And we should probably make sure we do something really cool right now or else we're going to miss this opportunity. That's a business instinct. That is a savvy that isn't, you can't coach that. I mean, you can make people aware of it, but it's something you kind of already have to have burning inside of you that I think each one of us does. And as a unit, it's amazing for me to be a part of it and witness when we do that, that moment of like, we knew exactly, we got to nail this thing and we do.
Yeah, I can think of this happening, like at an airport where it's like, Mark's talking to that guy over there. And it's like, there's something I need to be over there.
Mark has a certain look on his face like, this guy's important. And we pick up on that.
Yeah, it happens with Chuck a lot. And Chuck, because Chuck will be more outgoing than the three of us. But then we'll see him engaged in something and we then go, let's go hang around Chuck because we never know what's going to happen next. And it's just, I mean, so to tie it to, you know, your show and the topic we're talking about, it has helped grow our business to have that instinct to know for any business person, when you're in front of the right people to advance your business, you better be ready to turn it on.
Situational awareness.
Awareness.
And be ready for the opportunity. Yeah. Don't stumble. Go, I don't know what I'm going to say to this guy. Have a pre-prepared plan in your mind. Okay, when I find somebody, here's what I'm going to lay on them.
Yeah.
And you go up and you talk to them, not like it's preconceived, and you're going to, you know, here's my standard speech I'm going to give you like a salesperson to come into your door. Yep. You go up and you approach them like a real person. You talk to them like someone you're interested to talk to because you are. You're interested. So be honest with them, and they'll sense that.
Have that elevator speech for everything.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, no, it's true.
It is absolutely true.
You have to have, because when people say, so what are you guys? Mm. And we hear that question a million times. What are you?
And then I think another part of that is adaptability. And this is something that was very important for us early on, because a lot of the time we'd go after a big presenter and we would miss the mark and we'd say, okay, geez, we can't get into this major performing arts center doing our show with them presenting us. However, we could, you know, market ourselves and rent the hall and make it happen anyway.
We're still in that venue, which gives us the credibility.
And to the people in that community, they have no idea what the difference is, that the presenter presented us or we presented us. Who cares?
Right.
We're at that performing arts center and we're doing our show and look, there are 800 people here. So aren't those guys awesome?
And then we get a call from the presenter to be a part of their series the next year.
Yeah. So I think... Right. You know, being able to work around situations that were obstacles, that was a huge part of us being successful and continuing to be successful, and not just giving up and saying, oh, well, I guess we didn't get the gig.
And then on that same subject, Chuck, that we have a unified understanding that, all right, we're going to make this work anyway.
Yep.
We're going to make it happen anyway. And so as a business owner, that's critical.
The word like, can't is
I've hit an obstacle, and our obstacles are presenters who think we're barbershop group and they don't hire us for their main stage performance. Well, you know what? Two counties over, we're going to rock the living crap out of that auditorium we're going to sell 1,000 seats and everybody's going to have a great time.
And that guy's going to hear about it.
Yeah. So it's not, for us,
he's got to pay full.
It's not spiteful as a business owner. It's not to spite the people who have been our obstacles. It's because we're confident of overcoming those things. And that's the confidence we have as a group. When you talk about skill, I think it's a skill. It's a skill that the four of us are unified in our confidence that we know put us on any stage in front of any audience at any given moment and say, we aren't going to tell you what you get to do. We're going to tell you when you walk on stage. We would still walk out confident.
And we'll evaluate the people as we walk out. We have a game plan, a set list, and we'll walk out. And as we're going along, we'll find out what people really like. Usually the first three songs are our indicator. And after that, we say, okay, we need to change the show in the middle. We'll call out songs, totally change the set list, but we accommodate that audience. And we come off as like super pros. But we just know how to talk to each other on stage without making it too obvious.
It's test marketing before you even present the product. Yep. I mean, it's testing the waters a little bit. But
you made a really good point, which I don't want to, again, I want people to catch on to. But it's one thing that I teach every single seminar, and it's the one that I'm amazed at that people don't do with having their business, and that is be ready for business.
Yes.
And you have to be ready all the time, whether it's with your 30-second commercial or whether it's just, you know, let's be ready to make anything happen right now. And the majority of people, you know, when I'm out and about and I run into a lot of salespeople and I say, oh, well, do you have a catalog? And their answer is no. Mm. I'm like, you don't even have a catalog with you of your list of products, or you don't have a business card with you.
Right.
And and then so if really when they left their home, they really weren't intentionally seeking business.
Right. My car's logoed. There's business cards in the dashboard. There's business cards in the side door. There's business cards in the tool bag. There's business cards in my pocket.
That's right.
Boom.
Yeah.
You're always ready.
And there's an 800 number or something or a website or something you can just throw at them real quick.
That's right.
Yep.
Great, guys. So we talked a little bit about some challenges. So let's talk about maybe a big obstacle or challenge that you faced and how you worked through that.
Well, we were discussing two major obstacles. One resulting from September 11th, 2001, which impacted just about any type of business across the country. And secondly, here in Michigan, 2006 was the early stages of like the bottom of the economy for our state. And we were a line item that could be crossed off. I mean, we were, as an entertainment group, conventions and conferences stopped having events. For schools, they were out of money. For fairs and festivals that relied on corporate support, they were out of money. And so 2006 forced us to have to kind of reevaluate what a full-time, job in the music industry was and whether or not we could flexibly add additional jobs outside of our group. For 11 years, Three Men and a Tenor was our full-time job from 1995 to 2006. Mm-hmm. And sadly, in Michigan, we were ahead of the curve for the bottom of the economy dropping, and we were forced into other businesses to help support families and take care of our obligations. And so that was a huge obstacle to remain together, to have jobs that were flexible enough to continue our opportunities to take shows whenever we got them, to continue to advance the group proactively. We could not tell people we're part-time nights and weekends because then they don't think to book you.
Right.
They have to think you're full-time. So you have to be full-time.
Image is everything.
Right. So behind the scenes, we're working other jobs, but we're trying to remain as flexible as possible to take everything we could do.
Again, they don't know what's going on in our personal lives. They just see what they see of our presentation on the internet and social medias, and they assume that we're still going full-time, which is important.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. We had to make a choice. I mean, we could, there are events to work, but they no longer have a viable dollar amount. So do we cheapen our product to work more frequently for probably a less quality event, or do we choose to keep the value of our product where it is? Mm-hmm. You might not make as many, or you may not do as many shows, but what your work remains quality. And that was a key decision.
It reinforces your image too.
Yeah, exactly. That was a huge thing, was like Glenn's describing. We may do one show a month now, guys, where we were doing 10. Mm-hmm. But in order to protect our value and to protect our dollar, our asking dollar when Chuck's selling the group, we have to be able to say no. Because otherwise, if we go down with the economy, it takes a long time to build it right back up again. And so we talk about obstacles.
It's a competition thing. Well, we heard you just did a show for X amount of dollars. Well, how come you're charging us 20% more? How do you...
Right.
You have to keep that dollar amount where it is, sacrifice on less gigs, but you're still making the same amount, maybe a little less, but the same amount in the long run.
And they all talk to each other. All those presenters know each other.
They sure do.
And so that was a critical. But I want Chuck to really talk about 2001, because as the booking agent, I mean, that was an incredible challenge to try and sell the group to people.
That was a year when we had really been ramping up. The late 90s, we did so many school performances, and we were really well networked and really well positioned, and the fall of 2001 was the best year of business we were ever going to have, because we were booked in markets strategically. I mean, we had pinpoints all around Michigan. It's like, we're going to go here and here and here and here and cover the map, and then we're going to go back a couple weeks later and we're going to do these major public performances, and guys, we are going to clean up, and 2 years later, we're going to come back and do a reunion tour, and it's going to be amazing. And then September 11th came, and every single school canceled from September until November. And it was the busiest schedule we'd ever had. And so some of them re-engaged for later on in the year, but we couldn't quite re-engage the school stuff and the public stuff. And it just really gutted that entire campaign. So we were really kind of back to, back to ground zero on that, unfortunately, which was really difficult. However, in the wake of that, we were simultaneously in negotiations with PBS, who said, hey, guys, we would really like to do a show with you. And that was laden with its own obstacles because we had to come up with money. You know, they said, well, you know what? You might think we're just going to finance this, but you need to get some sponsors. And so we had to come up with, you know, $60,000 in sponsorship money. And we had to, you know, take a lot of time to prepare a show that works for television. Four 15-minute sets that we finally crafted with a director. Two separate filmings. One where we worked with a company that had great camera angles and good follows and everything, but the lighting wasn't right and the camera exposures weren't right. And we had to throw away all of the footage we had.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just devastating to us because
what happened, we had people from another PBS station at that show and watched what we created live that night. Yeah. And that's what gave us the opportunity to do it a second time, properly done.
We invited, again, as a maybe a story or a tip, we invited the lady from Detroit Public Television to come see our taping of our show for Midland Public Television. And because she was there in the audience, and we had invited her because, again, as a business owner and you're like looking at opportunities, we said she needs to see it live in order to make a decision for Detroit to actually take the show over. And that's exactly the way it played out. But fortunately, she was there as crappy as the video was, as Chuck described. It was horrible. It was dark, so dark. It was like the TV was almost off. That's how black.
Goodness. As I recall, you just described her reactions to watching the tape results from that night was, this is terrible.
This is terrible. this is the worst TV I've ever seen. And we said, well, wouldn't you like to make it better? And she said, yeah, can you bring $60,000 to the table and we'll do all the public or production and we'll do everything else.
And thank goodness for Mark. He went out there and he scraped, I don't know how you did it.
It was a fight.
That was a battle and a half for you.
It was a fight.
And here's an obstacle that none of us actually, I just crossed my mind out of that. The contract negotiations for this would have, they originally would have wanted us to turn over the rights to our name and all previous recordings, and we would
just
have
like
been
a record contract.
Yep. Yeah, we would have been owned by PBS, and so that was a big negotiation.
We tiptoed through that garden very well.
Yeah. So
have a good lawyer.
Yes, have a good lawyer.
I would agree with that.
Should we talk lawyers for a while?
Legal
counsel has been helpful for the trademarking, for all the licensing of our music, for the PBS legalities of licensing video as well as audio for things like that. If you're doing promotional videos for your businesses, have a lawyer and understand how that works for your business, because the video is absolutely imperative these days. You have to have good video.
Well, it also makes you legitimate. If you show up with a lawyer like, oh, these guys are serious, now they've got you in a different light.
Yeah.
And you can find a reasonable lawyer that will work with you. I've been fortunate. When I was smart enough, the one thing, when I was brand spanking new doing this, but I had a friend, and he helped me out initially in the beginning. And then he gave me a referral. And as I got bigger, then I got another referral. Mm-hmm. And and basically, I've had a branch of that same legal firm for the whole, 20 years. And I pay a lot more than I did at that very beginning. But how smart. You have to be
but
smart.
But you can afford it now, too. Because you had the lawyers in the beginning. You can afford to hire one now.
That help you with contracts. Yeah. That help you with, copyrights. Yeah. That help you with trademarks. And you just got to do that.
Another obstacle would be when we were three men and a tenor and wanted to shorten our names so that we could be on radio and TV as 3MT, just a shortened moniker of our name.
Yep.
And we tried to trademark that. And because that's all we really wanted was a shortened name. So we didn't have to be what we weren't, for people who were wondering, why should I hire three men and a tenor? It sounds like a choral group, gospel op or whatever. And we said, well, we're 3MT. And so we tried to pursue that. Well, 3M Corporation didn't like that. And so we started getting letters.
We have rights to 3M everything.
3M everything. And they started sending us cease and desist letters. And because we had a lawyer, we were able to kind of doctor and at least go through the legalities of the paperwork and the wording and realize that first of all, A, they mean business. B, we're going to spend a heck of a lot of money defending this for nothing. because they'll just keep going until we run out of cash.
Yeah, and, their pockets are much deeper than ours.
And we were in a, it was right around 2003, and that was right when we were making the PBS show, and we didn't have any money to begin with. So I guess the point of that story is, if, because we had a lawyer, we were able to be consulted to say, let this go. Secondly, we wouldn't have even known what was going on without a lawyer and the legalities of it. But but just the importance of trademarking and copywriting and all those things that businesses go through, you got to pay for it. It's an investment. You have to spend that money. We have spent it. We didn't have it. But we knew we should be protective of what could happen by investing in that lawyer than to have the, what happened on the other side. And we've had some other issues along the way in our 25 years, but the lawyer has always paid for himself.
Absolutely.
I mean, it has always been worth the investment.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
You know what I love about this whole story, and I think it's just so important for anyone wanting to start a business or have a business, is I think that people always think there's a race to somewhere. It's like, oh, when we get here, we'll have made it. Or when we get here, it'll all be good. Or when we get here, it's going to be good. And it's like, I always say, you're only as good as the gig you did yesterday.
Exactly. And, there's no finish line.
There is no finish line. You're always going to have ups and you're going to have downs, and you work on what's the next up, and you stay focused, you stay positive, and you guys are a really good example of making that happen.
I'm going to disagree with you on that.
Uh-oh.
There is a finish line. It's when you're happy.
Okay.
When you're happy, you're there. Now, you keep on going, but why, you know, you... To be happy, you've gotten to a point where, hey, I'm loving this. I do this every day. I may not be making all the money in the world, but I've reached a finish line. I'm personally happy.
I get to get up and do that every day.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
You can't beat that. I mean, yeah, the rest of it is perks. But when you get to happy, man, there you go.
And we get to travel and have other people pay for it.
Yeah. What's that story about the station, the train station, where you miss what's in the middle if you're always waiting for the destination?
That's right.
That's totally it. I mean, it's like if you're just waiting for where's your next stop going to be in life, then you miss all of the beautiful prairies and all the mountains and all the lakes and rivers that were outside your train window all the way through.
That's right.
And that's totally it.
Yeah. And if you can't recognize that you're happy, you're missing out on so much.
Which brings us really to a really, it really segues to our next question really nicely. And that is, well, what does working from your happy place mean to you, both personally and professionally?
It means everything to me. Because I told the guys, I says, you know, I've worked blue collar again. I'm going to go back to that. I work blue collar, and if I'm not happy there, I'm just doing it because I'm supposed to. There's a whole different frame of mind. You've got so much more energy and stuff. When you're working from your happy place, it doesn't feel like work. We've grown as a group under the great words of George Burns. You find a job you love, you never work a day in your life. And if working from your happy place, as Glenn says, once you realize you're happy, it's not work anymore. It's just personal effort to continue the joy. For me,
I think that's absolutely right. I think without that component, you can phone it in and you can make it happen. You can do a job and get it done. But when you have passion like I have and like these guys all have for what we're doing, you don't just do the job. You excel. You do something that's creative. You go way beyond every single time. Not because it's like, oh, well, the boss says this. No. This is our thing, and we're going to do the best damn job we can because it's awesome.
It makes you happy to do it.
Absolutely. I think it's everything. It is absolutely. I agree with you totally, Paul. It is absolutely everything, because if you've got the passion for what you're doing, it doesn't even feel like it's extra when you're doing extra.
It's a natural extension of where you are.
Yeah.
Money comes with it.
Absolutely. Hopefully.
I'm just saying the money part of it is a gift. I mean, sometimes you will have to. Some people think it's a sacrifice. Find something else that you really like. I love to bang on metal, to grind it, to drill holes in it, to weld it, to make something out of this raw product called steel or aluminum or something, and then something goes out the door, and I'm like, that's actually going to have a greater purpose because I got my hands on it. I love that. I took every industrial arts class I could in high school because that's my secondary love. But music surpasses that. So I'm fortunate enough to be able to go back to that as a side income if I ever have to. But right now I'm doing it because I enjoy it. And my boss knows that. He says, I see that you're really good at what you do with the singing thing. I won't have a problem with you taking time off. We'll work our logistics around that, knowing that you are going to be going on the road now and then. And so what we're going to do is we're going to make you like a fill-in guy. So I weld one day, then I'm on the press another day, you know, the big 10-ton presses, and then I'm over on, in the CNC department another day, and then I'm building these APU motors. I'm working on motors another day. It's just... I'm
and
in
then
a really
you're
happy
for Jay
place
Leno.
Right now. I get, then I'm going, and then I'm going to open up for Jay Leno, and then I'm going to go back and work on cars like he does.
That's incredible, but it just shows that when you're really happy, you each have kind of found something outside of even doing this. And I think that's just you've been allowed to do something that you're passionate about, even outside of the singing. So with other opportunities that you get, I think it just crosses over into life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, you know what? I really like doing this too. And there's just a real happiness. You're so right about it. It doesn't feel like work when you're really doing what you love.
And it doesn't.
I've had, of the guys in the group, since 2006 when we had to transition from full to part-time, I've had five different jobs since then. Mm-hmm. And I think Chuck has had one additional job or two, three?
Three.
Paul's been with the same company since 06.
Since 07, actually, yeah.
And Glenn was a stay-at-home dad right after we made the transition and then started his own company. But I've had five different times I've had to not only interview and win a job in a tough job market and then had to, you know, remain flexible enough in whatever I was pursuing to still be able to perform and to still manage our business and to still do the things that the group was doing. In fact, you know, while I'm interviewing for these jobs, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, well, can I still do shows if I take this job? If they offer me a job, am I going to be able to do this?
It's a great balancing act.
And it's been challenging to find those things that were, I was call it convicted and, you know, and passionate enough to like win over a job, to get a job, and yet know in the back of my mind, but I still need these days off and I needed, you know, those kinds of things. That's hugely challenging. And that's partly why when it didn't work out, I had to find something else. And so here, as we talk about, you know, the maintaining the happy place or whatever, the happy place is the group for me. But the reality of life and the reality of bills and being a husband and raising three kids and mortgages and things like that is I got to have that other thing, but it also has to balance. It has to be both. And so
sort of symbiotic.
And that's really been challenging. And I know as a business owner, you're always tied to your business and it's 24/7. And my wife is a nurse and she works, you know, a full 12-hour shift and she goes to work and comes home and here's her paycheck at the end of her shift. Or the, you know, their payroll time or whatever. For me, it's I got to create it. I have to make it happen. I'm always on the clock. I'm trying to make this thing work. I got three business partners in three different towns. And so, but all of that being said, it's just to say that it was always to get me back to where the group was performing. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything came back to
That's the product.
Everything came back to making sure this was still moving forward and that we were still staying together and this was still happening. And so, and we've all done that. I mean, we all have our own levels of sacrifices to make that happen, but it was incredibly challenging to try and get five new jobs to try and make it happen at the same time. But
success doesn't come without sacrifice.
Not at all.
Something just, I would say to somebody who is at the moment not working from their happy space, whatever that other thing that you that has your happy place is, carry that happy energy over to what you have to do to get by, because that positive energy will make the other thing you're doing to get by so much better. That will give you passion. That it, you might not be passionate about the job you're doing, but if you're a passionate person, as you're talking to somebody, that positive energy is going to work wonders for the job you are doing. Well, so
I like to overlap.
Exactly.
It may seem like a simple thing. If you're just walking in from the street and you hear me, I've got my music going loud and proud in my welding booth when I'm creating. I'm over there grinding and welding and do whatever, no matter where I am, I take my music with me. They know when Big Paul comes over their area, they're going to hear some good classic rock or country or whatever I'm in the mood for that day. They accept that Paul's going to have his music. That's what I bring, and it kind of mixes in with the TV, says, okay, I have to do 500 pieces of this, and they all have to be good.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I love the production work, because it's the continue, what do you call it, the continuous work allows for new ideas.
Repetition,
great ideas have come out of my mind from this repetitive work.
Sure.
And I just, like I say, the music's with me, so like Glenn was saying, you bring your happy stuff mm-hmm. into the job that you have to do, and life's a little bit better that way, I think.
Great. So share with us something you're extremely proud of.
Regarding the group?
Yes.
Yeah. 25 years. Same four guys. Just short of 25 years.
Yeah,
unheard of. I mean, so few groups have gone that long without some kind of major shakeup.
Or member change.
Exactly. Yeah. That's common.
Or delay or breakup or time off or whatever.
Right.
I mean, we've kind of always been moving it forward, and that's unique too.
We're of the mind of inch by inch, and you look behind you, you got 10 miles behind you. Just 1 inch, you're moving forward all the time, whether it's little increments, and sometimes you take a big jump like the PBS special. That was a big jump for us,
yeah.
But that moved us up the ranks a little bit better. We're always trying to go 1 inch at a time forward, trying not to slide.
I think one of the things that I think is the coolest about our group is that we have done it not alone. We've certainly had loads of help along the way, mm-hmm. but we have done it non-traditionally. We have done it without the record label. We've done it without the manager. We've done it without, mm-hmm. you know, things that a lot of people think, oh, well, that's what you have to be a professional group. But things which I think a lot of the time are pitfalls for bands. There are so many stories of bands that are so deeply in hock by the time they're done recording their album and touring for the first year, and then they're $100,000, $200,000, $400,000 in debt to their record label.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they hate each other and they break up right after that tour anyway.
Right.
So then they're done. Then
they're
just
still
in
responsible
debt
for that bill.
And so what good was that to that group? And we're lucky enough to have borrowed small increments of money, never more than a little bit more than $100,000 to do what we're doing, and always have it be something that we're all passionate about. And, you know, we're a self-made group for the most part who has relied on friends and partners to help lift us up, but never to do it for us.
And don't overextend and yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we said, we said, what can we afford to pay back if we need money? So we get a line of credit for like $100,000 or $50,000 was our first. We made sure that we could stay within our acceptable range of what we can pay back. Mm-hmm. And as an entertainment group, that's even worse than a restaurant when you try and open up that.
Yeah. Right.
We actually,
I get that.
We actually wrote a song, "Thank You, Banker Man," and it was intended to woo our banker into giving us money.
And it worked.
It works.
That's so great. Well, I've had the pleasure of hearing you guys on numerous occasions, and one of the things that's always moving for me in the middle of your show is when you share about your USO tour.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd love you just to speak to that briefly, because that has to be something you're extremely proud of. I know it is, because I've heard you talk about
Absolutely.
it.
Absolutely. Well, I joke in the show that we were contacted by email by a music teacher at Vilsack military base in Germany. And he was really just kind of pumping us up. He's like, I heard all about your group and what you do with kids and communities, and you support the troops and everything. And we would just love for you to come over here to Germany. I'll set you up with a tour. I know all the music teachers on 10 different bases, and I'll set your whole tour up. Would you guys do this? And, you know, we talked about it, and we were absolutely ready to go. And we responded back, sure, we'd love to. We, you know, let's set this up. And he says, great. Can you pay your own way? And so we were presented with an opportunity as a business, you know, as a group, and yet we had to come up with the way to get there. And so Chuck and I knew from shows we had done the guy that worked in General Motors headquarters in Detroit. And so we reached out to him and said, we're going to need vehicles. We're going to need sound equipment. We'll probably be able to, you know, afford it to get over there, but we're going to need help on the other side. And so he put us in touch with people that could help us get the cars and get the sound equipment. But I actually put our first tour on a credit card because we had no other alternatives. And our business manager at the time told us we shouldn't go.
And this is 2004.
2004.
We just finished the PBS special.
We just finished PBS. We really didn't have anything going on.
Yeah, we needed something PR-wise.
Something had to happen.
Until the PBS started getting traction and taking off, we had to have something to fill in that gap.
And we didn't know if it would, and it wasn't, so we kind of had to do that. So I took a faith you know, gamble and just said, look, it's only going to be a couple of thousand, and then we can pay that back off, but the company doesn't have the credit. And we have to go. We have to be able to get over there. We need to be able to tell this story. So we did. And we also, in 10 visits, 10 different military bases, and a stop at Landstuhl Hospital, where we were, because we were an a cappella group, we could go from room to room and actually sing at bedsides of the wounded soldiers just off the front lines of battle. And if you've ever met a wounded soldier in their hospital bed, you'll realize they're about the most humble people, and just overwhelmingly, we were just like, man, this is life changing.
I'm glad they're on my side.
Yeah. And thinking through, as we've all kind of said throughout this interview, boy, how did we get here? You know, think of all the things that have happened for us to be at this bedside right now for this. And so that tour went really well. And 2 years later, they wanted us back because they wanted to just kind of relive that whole excitement and energy and enthusiasm. We had a contact at Daimler Chrysler. And we had a military friend at, what's the port?
Port Huron.
Selfridge in Port Huron. Selfridge Air Force Base.
Yeah.
So we had invited one of the military men at Selfridge Air Force Base to go with us as our military manager on
liaison,
the tour.
Liaison.
And because of his contact at Daimler Chrysler, he said, I think they have a fund that will help pay for your expenses. And I said, that would be amazing because we need about $15,000. And when I reached out to them, they had an application process, and I didn't know anything from anything. We'd never done this before. And they said, you need to be a 501c3. And I said, but we're not. And they said, well, unless you are, you can't get this money. And I said, well, what if that business owner's...
That's the business owner's best question, right?
How do we get around the obstacle?
So I was in Lansing, and I was having lunch with a friend of mine who was the executive director of the YMCA in Lansing, and we had done fundraising shows for the YMCA in Lansing, and I said, how about this? What if Daimler Chrysler gives you the $15,000, and then the downtown YMCA of Lansing sponsors our tour of Germany as the Freedom and Families Tour, and we can then go do our show, and we can get the $15,000 we need to do it? Without a hitch.
That's great.
It's exactly how it happened.
So the whole point is don't let an obstacle stop you.
There are ways to make it happen.
There's a way around it.
Yep. I would say the story of that, Belinda, is networking. I mean, to me, that all of those things I just mentioned were like someone said something to me that said, I know somebody. We knew the guy in GM, so he's going to put us in touch with this person. The guy at Daimler Chrysler said, you need to be a 501c3. To me, that meant, what can we do with the why? And I knew someone there. And so you just ask those questions, and it came together like that. So, and ultimately, the end result was another tour of Germany, 16 days, 38 shows, and, you know, that many more people that got to see us, and a much more enriching second tour of Germany. So it was great.
That's great.
Yeah.
I always say the 5 key important words are, who do you know who?
Who do you know who?
Yeah.
And always ask what if.
That's right.
Yeah.
So this has been so great, guys. So in closing, what advice would you give to other entrepreneurs, maybe even other people that would want to start a group like this or even own their own business? You all have other businesses that you do. So what advice would you give to entrepreneurs?
I've got one word, dream.
I love that.
Dream. And then believe that you can get there in some form.
Absolutely. That's great. Anybody else?
Get behind the dream and make it happen. It's persistence. It's hard work. It's tenacity. Staying on point.
Great.
Don't be afraid.
Yes.
Don't be afraid. Just go out.
I was initially afraid to... I said, we're going to make an example we're all in our own little boats. And we're all going to step off of our boat, our family and our security, and we're all going to step onto this raft called Three Men and a Tenant, and we'll see if it floats. And I use that analogy, and it's not floated. Mm. It's now a hydroplane.
I would say don't let the have-tos overwhelm you because it seems like there's always, as a business owner, you're always like, I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to do this. Well, you do. there are things you have to do, but there are some things that could wait. So know the difference between the have to's and the things that can be delayed a little bit so you can have quality time with your family, or you can have quality time with your friends, yes, or you can recharge your own batteries, because that'll drain you like crazy if you let the have to's drive you into the ground.
Yep.
You know, that I've lived that. I know we've all lived that. I know it's affected us, but that's critical. Don't let the have to's drive you into the ground.
I agree. I used to jump every time and feel like I had to do everything, and I've always learned that tomorrow it's still there.
Right.
Yeah.
Tomorrow the contract's still sitting there, the person who wanted to get in touch with you is still there, and just really living in the moment, enjoying where you're at in the moment.
Ask people around you to help you keep from that from happening.
Yep.
You know, really be honest with people and say, look, if I really start to get drawn in and I'm just buried all the time and all I'm telling you is I can't because I have to, help me know that I still can do things and still get the things done that I need
to.
Because sometimes the business owner is going to keep driving.
You're right. Yep.
So make sure you rely on
them. Drive themselves right out of a marriage, right out of a
relationship. Rely on those people that love you, that are around you, that pull you out from doing it till you can't do it anymore. Yeah.
Great. So any exciting things that you're working on? And plus, I want you to tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, we got next year. We're talking about multimedia in our program. We're going to probably have some video and pictures being on the screen behind us. It may actually tie into some of the songs we're doing on stage. We have a 25-year reunion coming up in 2017 where we want all kinds of visuals of where we've been and where we're going. And new music for the show. We want to take it a bigger sound. We're probably going to add some bigger production values to the music we're doing. But no one will be disappointed. It's certainly where we're going is because of where we've been, and we just want to take it to a larger production level.
Great.
Sure.
Where can everybody find you?
I think the best place is our website. It's pretty easy to remember. It's the full name of our group, which is Three Men and a Tenor. But everything is spelled out, lowercase, no spaces. So it's www.threemenandatenor.com. Threemenandatenor.com. Do not stop at threemen.com.
No,
it is a dramatically different website. So threemenandatenor.com. If you're savvy on the internet and you subscribe to various multimedia or social media networks, certainly you can watch and share our videos on YouTube. You can get our tweets on Twitter. And you can like us and become our friend on Facebook.
Oh, that's nice.
If you can't remember all of that stuff, it's 3 Men and a Tenor, you twit face.
What? Oh.
Gotcha.
Oops.
All right. So why don't we close out this show with a song, guys? You've been absolutely wonderful, and thank you so much for being my guest.
Well, thank you for having us.
It's been great.
Thanks for having us.
It's been great. You're going to love this song.
2, 3, 4, 1. Said it's all right. Have a good time, because it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
You say it's all right. You say it's all right.
Say it's all right. Have a good time, cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
We're gonna move it slow. Oh, when the lights are low.
Cause when you move it slow, it feels like a morgue. Cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
Now listen to the beat. And kind of tap your feet. Yeah.
You got soul. Everybody knows that it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
Cause when you wake up early in the morning, feeling sad like so many of us do, you gotta hum a little soul and make love your goal. Surely something's gotta come to you. You say it's all right. Yeah. You say it's all right. Yeah.
Said it's all right. Have a good time, cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
Everybody clap your hands and give yourselves a chance. Yeah.
You got soul. Everybody knows that it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. So now I'm gonna find me a woman who will love me and treat me real nice.
Cause when my boss got to go, my love, she will know. Morning, noon, and in the night. And you know what she's gonna say?
Say it's all right.
She'll say it's all right. She'll say it's all right. Say it's all right. Have a good time. Cause it's all right. Oh, it's all right. Everybody clap your hands. I gave yourselves a chance. You got soul. Everybody knows that it's alright. Oh, it's alright. You got soul. Everybody knows that it's alright. Oh, it's alright.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.